This is football. I'm Kevin Clark. JJ Watt joins in just 1 second. Not sure how you combine as good a player and hang in one person as JJ Watt. I really enjoy our talks. You're going to enjoy this one. Quick reminder, 5-star reviews help everybody, help us. So go ahead, tap that 5th star there. And then after this interview is recorded, you'll notice it's conspicuous because we don't ask about JJ Watt talking about one of the best defensive tackles in his era, best football players in his era retiring. Aaron Donald called it a day in the NFL. Can't say I'm surprised because I think there were people who know a hell of a lot more about the inner workings of football that were completely adamant that he was going to retire after the Super Bowl 2 years ago. He comes back. He seemed at peace with it. And then comes back another year. And it just felt like every offseason you're going to play a waiting game. And so I'm not shocked by this. They restructured the contract with that in mind. Early last week, they restructured the deal. They gave him a little bit of money as a going away present and also freed up salary cap space. A quick couple thoughts about Aaron Donald. Number one, I never want to hear about height in a football player again. I'm a big proponent of big people beat up little people. And I think there's thresholds you have to cross. But this is one of the strongest guys, stoutest guys in the history of the sport who was big. He wasn't as tall as other people, and that's why he dropped. He worked. Andrew Whitworth said something to me a couple months ago that I thought about every time I thought about Aaron Donald since, which is he worked like an undrafted free agent on his first day on the league every single day. Every single day. And I think people think that's normal, right? I think everybody thinks like, oh, every crappy backup left tackle says like on Instagram that they have the Mamba mentality. And they're like, oh, I'm up at 5 a.m. Very, very, very few are. Like very few are. And that's their right. Off-season practice or Saturday practice or workouts at 3 times a day are not mandatory, but they are for greatness typically. Very few people have mailed in an NFL career relative to their athleticism and put on a even got an All-Pro at any point. And so I think that's what you need to know first. Is he combined a athleticism that allowed him to make offensive linemen look like literal children in some cases, just throw them to the ground. He combined that with the work ethic to get better every single day. And when that happens, that's a very dangerous thing. Jeff Fisher, 2 things. So I had asked Jeff Fisher a handful of times about Aaron Donald. And the one thing he had said always was that it was almost frustrating. Obviously not. He's one of his favorite players of all time. But it was almost frustrating to have him in practice because he would wreck plays. And they would have to actually game plan for him in practice when pads were on because he was going to wreck a play. And it's, hey, we're trying to install this. Well, you can't because Aaron Donald is in your face. So they have to screw around with tempo and stuff like that. And I always thought that was a really funny compliment, is that you wreck practice and we actually can't get the things we need to do across because you're too good and you're eating up our offensive line, even if the offensive lineman is good. I actually heard on my way back because I was running errands, I'll just peek behind the curtain that, I wasn't expecting Aaron Donald to retire today. So I was out, getting a salad. But I was listening to Sirius Radio, and wouldn't you know it, Jeff Fisher was on. And he said a couple of things I found fascinating. He said one thing, and I've heard this about other players, but Aaron Donald in particular thrives because technology exploded right around when Aaron Donald came into the league. What I mean by that is like iPads, you got to take that stuff home. You got to watch more film than ever. You got to understand, you could see 16 reps of a left tackle or a right guard, 16 games of reps in the time it used to take to watch 3-4 games back when you had to cut up the film or ask an analyst, hey, can you quality control guy? Hey, can you cut this up for me? And I'll watch in the facility. Now you could Cabo and watch that stuff. And what Fisher had said was that essentially Aaron Donald was not only the hardest worker in the league, not only one of the most gifted athletic specimens that existed in the league, maybe in the history of the league, when you consider his body type, but he had more information than any great athlete at that position ever, because he was able to sit there and watch tackle after tackle, rep after rep, and understand what these guys wanted to do. And to the point that, like, you would get in a situation where, like, teams have different call sheets because of Aaron Donald being out of a game, or he's playing a different role, or he's hurt. Like, you would have to literally change what you were doing as an offense depending on what Aaron Donald was doing. Is he on the field or is he not? That's two completely different lives. And then finally, this is, and people say, like, winning is a skill. And I think people think that's a cliche, and it's not. Because the thing coaches have said for a long time is that Aaron Donald, and he's one of the greats in this, was always setting up the game-winning play. He wanted to get pressure. He wanted to get a hand in your face all the time. But in the fourth quarter, late in games, he was not looking to close on second and four. He was looking to close on third and seven. And that's a skill in setting it up. And I remember watching film with Chris Collinsworth a couple of years ago at his house, and he was talking about Gronk and Brady. And he's saying the one thing Gronk and Brady will do is they will pass up an opportunity for a second quarter 25-yard gain because they're setting up the 40-yard gain with 40 seconds to go in the fourth quarter. And they'll say, you know what? I know we have this look, but we're gonna just do something else real quick because we're going to do it the next time when it really matters, when we can get a walk-in touchdown when it really matters. And the greats understand when to cash in the winning. That's the long and the short of it. Like, the greats understand when to cash in their chips and say, all right, it's winning time. That's not a cliche. Winning is a skill, and Aaron Donald knew how to do it. And on the biggest stage in the Super Bowl, you saw that. He knew exactly what he needed to do and what to close. And when, where, why, how, that Aaron Donald had all the answers. And I don't think we're going to see a defensive tackle like him. And the last thing I'll say is, like, I was actually thinking about this walking around right after a drop. And I was thinking, like, there's two types of great players. There's the great player who changes everything. So, like, Mahomes is changing the way people play quarterback. Playing out of structure, different arm angles. That's not necessarily new, but those types of arm angles are. All the things we went over with Spencer Hall a couple weeks ago. And then there's great players who, because they're so great, change nothing. And what I mean by that is, good luck trying to be Aaron Donald. Good luck. You can't do it. He didn't do anything except take a incredibly athletic body, maximize it with work ethic, and ragdoll guys. It wasn't the playing style. It wasn't the scheme. It wasn't anything. There will be no Aaron Donald heir apparent. It will not happen. And I think that's the greatest compliment I can give, is that there will be no next generation of Aaron Donalds. There will just be us appreciating Aaron Donald. He will live on YouTube and not in the NFL. Ladies and gentlemen, J.J. Watt. All right, J.J. Watt is here on behalf of Dick's House of Sport. He is also a sports broadcaster, although I just saw, J.J., you are now the second best broadcaster in your family because your wife is going to do some NWSL for Amazon. Are you ready to just ride her coattails for the next 50 years?
That is a great research and very quickly done, as it was just announced moments ago. Yes, I am. She is going to, A, look significantly better than me on television. Thankfully, she'll represent the family well in that capacity. And B, she'll be much smarter, well-spoken, and just overall better than me. So I will ride her coattails as far as I'll take.
I agree. I agree on everything. She's going to be much better at you at everything, and probably a better athlete too. Let's be real. Yes. All right. So last time we talked was right after you retired during the Super Bowl week last year, and you were kind of staring at a year without football, knowing you could do other things, and you kind of joked, and you said, hey, you want to do Broadway, you want to do SNL, you know, you want to look at, go on Saturdays and see different college football venues, all that stuff. The most fun thing you did, JJ, in the last year without football was what?
Oh my gosh. I mean, hands down, like, maybe it's a cop-out answer, but the honest truth is the most fun thing I'd do is spend time with my son. There is literally nothing better than taking him to the park and seeing him go down the slide and his face, or seeing him, you know, we went to the zoo the other day and seeing his face light up when he sees the giraffe. Or, I mean, just this morning we went to the park and he was chasing birds around for 45 minutes. Kid, just all he wanted to do was chasing birds around. So like, those are the greatest things for me. Now, taking that out of the equation, I'll take the family part out and just the most fun, cool thing. Wow, it's been a crazy year. I mean, truly, when I look back that far and think about all the stuff that we've done, golly. Wow. Not many questions stumped me completely. we had the Burnley parade where we won the championship, got promoted up to the Premier League. We had going to TJ's Thursday night game and spending time with him and then going to the game. We had, I mean, Rom winning the Masters was insane. Obviously, having, you know, being friends with him. We had Christmas with my brother up in Wisconsin. My wife and I went to Paris. We've done a whole, it's been a crazy, awesome year. CBS, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We did the Super Bowl. It's been a crazy year. So I'm very lucky and grateful, and I only miss football a little bit. So I guess that's a positive on all notes.
I want to get to football. I want this interview to be about football, but you mentioned John Rahm winning the Masters. He recently, this podcast runs on Omaha Productions. Eli is technically one of our bosses. He's an amazing boss. He asked John Rahm who the worst celebrity golfer was. He said you, but he said, first of all, he called you a celebrity, said in the celebrity bracket. That's important to note. But then he said you were too strong and big to play golf. Do you accept that? Do you accept that kind of rationale that you can never be that good at golf because you're too big and strong? John Rahm, by the way, big and strong.
Yeah, no, he's a nice guy. So he put as many caveats on that statement as he physically could. We've been missing each other because if I've been out of town, he's been out of town. So we haven't played together in probably 3 months or so. I've gotten better. I have improved. So I think he needs to see that. But yes, that is certainly a problem in my game. And I've told the story. I had to beg my driver because every time I step on a tee box, everybody wants to see me swing as hard as I can, obviously. And I'm a showman. I want to give him the show. So I swing as hard as I can. And of course, it just slices right every time. So recently I have begged the driver. I've taken 3 wood on the tee and significantly improved my game. So until I can control my own ego with the driver, the 3 wood wins.
You know, I just think it's unfair for Jimmy. He hasn't played with you for 3 months. As you know, every bad golfer has figured something out on the range at all times. So I just feel like he should respect that we're just grinding and we think we found something in our takeaway. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. And he knows I don't go to the range. So I show up 30 seconds before my tee time and I tee off. I do not range. I don't putt. I do nothing. That's my style. If you wonder why I'm not getting better, that's the reason.
There it is. All right. So this is a big question. You can take it anywhere. We're in the middle of the draft process. We just had the combine a little bit ago. Everybody's getting so overanalyzed at this point. And there's guys where, you know, the thing I always think about all the time is Marcus Mariota. The report was he has no red flags, which is a red flag. You know, that kind of typifies what we're doing this time of year, where people with no questions, they're being asked questions, all of that kind of stuff. Anything, if you were put in charge of football tomorrow, football czar, is there anything you would change about the draft process, either how we talk about it, how these prospects are evaluated, what kind of testing they go through? What would you do?
That's a great question. I would first need more time to analyze it properly. But I think part of if I was in charge of football, which obviously Roger Goodell currently at the moment is, I think they have, you do have to give them credit for maximizing the exposure and monetizing it to the maximum levels by spreading it out over a certain amount of months. So football is on the top of the conscious mind, basically pretty much 12 months out of the year. It's pretty incredible. It's unbelievable. I think they've done a great job. And that's part of the reason that guys get paid the way they get paid. Like, I'm fortunate to have been a benefactor of that. So I give them a lot of credit. From a player standpoint, I think the number one biggest thing that we have to find a way to change is the bowl game thing where guys are opting out, guys are going to train, things like that. I just think in terms of football as a whole, we are doing a disservice to almost everybody, the players, the fans, everybody involved is not getting the maximum benefit because now we got some guys staying and playing, some guys opting out, some guys transferring. Like, we need to figure all that out.
Well, how would you go about solving that? I know it's really a big question.
But, I know. Yeah. I really don't know. I've seen a lot of different proposals and people trying to figure that question out. I've seen some people say, like, you know, move bowl games to the beginning of the next season, which is fascinating. But it's just, it really is a hard question to answer because I understand all the other logistical things that come along with it, like the school year and everything lining up. So it really is hard, and it has devalued so much of what used to be an incredible time of the year with bowl season. And it just doesn't, I mean, besides the playoff games, it just doesn't hit the same.
I completely agree on a lot of that stuff. And I think it will be worked out. It sounds like in a couple of years, athletes will be employees, and I guess some of that stuff can be streamlined. But right now, it's a big old mess. The biggest thing, JJ, is like, the college football, really, it's my favorite thing in the world, didn't make a whole lot of sense, like some of the rules. And now we're making new rules to paper over those. And those don't make any sense either. So it's going to be a confusing couple of years. I think we're pretty much
in a time of no rules right now. I think we're in a weird time right now of no rules. But I mean, we're finally basically saying what has been known for a long time, that these students are much more, you know, workers and employees than they are student athletes at the end of the day.
Sometimes I hear from guys when they get out of the league or they just get injured for a year and they're sitting around watching football or they're talking to guys in other buildings in a different way, and it changes their perspective on things. Has working in the media changed anything for you about maybe a specific thing about football, or that you understand a little bit more, or hey, you're having more conversations with coaches? Like, what has been working in the media like as far as your understanding of football? Because it's not just, hey, we're just prepping to start to get to this quarterback on Sunday. It's just so different now. Take me through that process.
Yeah, it's been fascinating, man. I mean, there's a million things that I've learned and seen. I don't know how deeply I want to go into it, but the truth is, like, the biggest thing that I've learned is how important it is to play in the biggest of games, and which is which is obvious. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but the amount of, for me being on the player side to me being on the announcer side, I personally know how much effort, energy, time, sacrifice, blood, sweat, tears, injury happens for every team, whether you're the number one team in the NFL or the number 32 team in the NFL with zero chance of making the playoffs. But the amount of care or mind space that you take up is so minuscule compared to the top, you know, let's call it three or four, maybe eight teams in the NFL. So there's these guys like that I know that I've been before, where you're on the, you know, second, third worst team in the league, first worst team in the league, and you're doing all the same things that the other guys are doing, but you're like, those are the things to me as like a broadcaster when I'm sitting in it and we're talking about like, hey, who should we highlight? I'm trying to highlight, you know, a couple guys where it's like, I know this guy's great. I know this guy's awesome. Like, yeah, well, that's not a big game this week. I'm like, okay. Like, you're just like, man, but that guy's playing great ball. Like, you got to be in the conversation to be in the conversation, you know?
Yeah, that's fascinating. All right, two quick things before we get to what we're doing with Dicks. We have something called One Rep Back. You get to relive any play of your career that you wish you could get back. What are you going with?
So I redo it, or I'm just
you redo it. You get to redo it, and you get to do it better, different, whatever you want to do.
And it's one play.
One
that
play.
I personally, oh man, I'm trying. I mean, I wish there was one play that would have won me a Super Bowl, or at least got me closer. I'll give it, and I don't want to give this answer because I don't even want to rethink about this play. But I will. Oh no, I know my answer. I know my answer for sure.
Good.
The Tony Romo play where I got – I beat Tyron Smith right off the line of scrimmage fast. It came in and I was literally trying to kill Tony Romo. I told this to his face. I was trying to break his back. That was the goal. And he – no idea how he knew it, but he felt my presence coming from behind. He spun out of it through a 57-yard touchdown, and that ended up being the game-winning touchdown. So I would redo that play, and I would smoke him.
And if you did, maybe you guys would work at different networks now. Who knows? Who knows what the One Rep Back butterfly effect would have been.
Yeah.
But thank God you both at CBS doing a great job. All right, last thing. It's called Badass. This is the wall back here. The biggest badass you ever played with. When you think badass, you think who? JJ Watt.
Oh, I mean, I got to give it to Brian Cushing. I mean, yeah, he's – when he took – the moment I knew it was my rookie year when we were returning an interception, And then a guy tried to block Brian. Brian smoked the guy. Then they were staring at each other talking and still unknown to this day why he did it, took off his own helmet and headbutted the guy who still had his helmet on. Nobody made him take off his helmet. Nobody ripped his helmet off. He just decided, I would rather headbutt that guy's helmet with my bare head. So I'll give it to Coach.
Yeah, that's number one with a bullet. All right, tell us, JJ, what we're doing with Dix.
Dix House of Sport is athlete paradise. It's kids paradise. It's athlete paradise. And I have been both in my life, and I truly am in paradise when I walk into this place. I mean, last year I did a grand opening for Dix House of Sport in Houston. And I literally walked in. I've been in many Dix Sporting Goods and never been in Dix House of Sport. And I walked in and I was like, this place, I literally said the words, I would like to live here. So now we've created an entire campaign around me wanting to live in 100,000 square foot Dix House of Sport. And we did the rock climbing wall. We did the batting cages. We did the TrackMan golf simulator. We've done it all. But they just truly have everything you could ever want as an athlete. And it's the most natural partnership for me because it's so, I walk in and I'm like, this is home. And it just feels great. And I'm very fortunate and lucky to partner with them. And I know that kids all over the country and communities all over the country benefit because they have, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods to go get their stuff.
Love it. Check it out. Check out JJ Watt on CBS. Check out Burnley. Check out NWSL on Amazon. Check it all out. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you, Kevin. Have a great day.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. All right, now it's time for part two of what we were trying to do, or what we did do last week, which is the ceilings for NFC teams. Did AFC last week. If you want to hear that, it's available. NFC, shaken to its core by one player who went from the AFC to the NFC on Friday, Kenny Pickett. It's now Pittsburgh's, now Philadelphia Eagle. Not really moving the needle for me. Although what I will say is it avoids something a little bit awkward, which is that I think if they sign Justin Fields or somebody with a higher ceiling, I think Jalen Hurts won't be all that good this year. You avoid the kind of Monday after week four column where it's like, should they look to the bench? Not going to happen with Kenny Pickett. We've seen Kenny Pickett. We've seen Fields. But I think Fields is a skill set that lends itself to a higher ceiling and sort of the absolute pinnacle of second quarterback syndrome where you say, well, at least we know we can run. At least we know we can make plays with outside the pocket, a lot of stuff, right? So there might be quarterbacks where as soon as Fields goes somewhere, they want him to start. And I don't necessarily think Pickett has that kind of skill set. I still believe in him as a long-term NFL player. I just never saw in practice anything from him. And I thought he was really good in college. And I enjoyed watching him play, but it just to me, he took too long with the ball. He only succeeded when he was in 2 minute and didn't take long to think about a certain play. Like it just felt like it was all too slowly developing. So I'm starting with Philadelphia because we're starting with the NFC East. And I can't believe I'm saying this. There are no Super Bowl teams in this division. Dallas and Philadelphia, in theory, have the rosters. They have the building blocks. But they brought back coaches that thought they should have been fired. And more than anything, Dallas, they've done nothing. They know what the path is to getting from good to great. Hardest thing to do in this league, get from good to great. They know what the path is, and they're not doing it. And I think Jerry's catching a lot of heat unfairly for saying, we were all in. I don't really, if you watch Jerry Jones' press conferences or listen to his transcripts, it's not like Jerry Jones is making, he's not nailing every sentence or every word. Sometimes he's just kind of saying things just to say it. I think what he meant was, we're locked in, we're turning the page, we're all in on this year. I didn't think he meant, we're gonna go out and sign four pass rushers and Christian Wilkins. I don't think that was ever in the cards, right? And so I don't argue we're in for Calvin Ridley. No, that was never gonna happen. But what I do know is there's a lot of daylight in between those two things. And what the Dallas Cowboys do is they draft well, they make a handful of moves every year to augment that, but that's not enough. That's not enough. And Marcus Spears said this a couple weeks ago, they just don't maximize their roster in the way that's required. There is a way to win if you're Dallas pretty easily because you draft well. No one's ever argued that. But boy, you got to do 5-6 moves every offseason because every single team, look at the Chiefs. Look what the Chiefs did. I just, every single year, the Chiefs go out and they go, we won the Super Bowl last year. And then they figure out what to do next. And signing Hollywood Brown for $11 million, who, when he's in a pass-friendly offense and is healthy, is a really good weapon. Those are the types of moves you do to make the gap even bigger. So what are the Cowboys doing to even chase the Chiefs, let alone the Niners, who beat the brakes off them last year? So Dallas, not a Super Bowl team. The gap is just too big, and they're not doing anything to close the gap. Hope is not a strategy. Improvement is not a strategy. This isn't Madden where everyone just improves 0.5 points every year and you go, we're a little bit better. Second year guy's a little bit better. Not how it works. Philadelphia improved some parts. So roster overhaul. Jason Kelsey retires, Fletcher Cox retires. That is massive. That is culture. That's everything. It's going to change how they play. I'm not convinced, by the way, the Saquon thing is not about kind of a new identity between the tackles. Saquon Barkley's running between the tackles was very, very good last year. They lose Jason Kelsey. Maybe they don't want to put Jalen Hurts through all that stress on his neck and his body and all that stuff in the tush push. Maybe we're going to see a little bit of a different 3rd-and-2 strategy than just tush pushing it over and over and over again. Just something to throw out there. Because when you lose Jason Kelsey and he's so valuable, what did Mitch Schwartz say? He's the most valuable lineman in the league because of what he's able to do. And he compared it to field goal blocking, where you're just going straight ahead and it requires unbelievable strength and discipline and all that stuff. Putting another center there is going to be a completely different experience. So Bryce Huff is a good signing. Bringing back Dickerson at guard is good. Barkley can be a fine signing. And then a couple other pieces, CJ Gardner-Johnson, excuse me. I'm still in recruiting mode from 10 years ago. Signed Devin White, who is not particularly good, but he's a piece there. And then the aforementioned Kenny Pickett, Kevin Byard released, Avante Maddox released. And that's kind of it. So I think that they improved some pieces. They lost massive ones. I think we're probably going to see a very similar year to the year we had last year, although it won't be as toxic because there won't be a kind of free fall because we know what these expectations are. The expectations, they crumbled on their expectations last year. It'll be a little bit different this year, but I just don't see anything significantly more than an early playoff exit. Washington and New York. We'll take that one at a time. I like what Washington has done. Where they've gone out and gotten credible pieces for their quarterback and not waited. I think the worst thing is when a team wants to see how a quarterback's going to do before they figure out, like, all right, we're gonna go get him weapons now. We're gonna get him an offensive line. It's like, no, you don't end up like Bryce Young. You get out, you go and you get the center now. You go and you get the guard now. You get the defense, the linebackers now. That to me is we're not gonna give anybody awards here, but you're gonna give kudos to a Washington team that understands that they can't do the Bryce Young thing this year. Giants. Brian Burns was a good trade, but still a ways away. So, yeah. So, to recap, no one can win the Super Bowl. Cowboys and the Eagles can win the division. Washington and the Giants can't win anything. All right, NFC North, possibly the easiest one because you don't have to make any big proclamations. We know what this is. You know that. This one's not going to surprise you. Lions and Packers, absolutely Super Bowl contenders, can win the Super Bowl. That's the aim. Can win the Super Bowl. Those two can win the Super Bowl. The Vikings cannot win anything. The Bears can win the division. Here's why I like the Bears more than the Vikings. First of all, the pieces that they've put together. So let's go through it. Released Cody Whitehair and Eddie Jackson a few weeks ago. Signed Kevin Byard, aforementioned Kevin Byard. DeAndre Swift, Gerald Everett, Jonathan Owens, acquired. Ryan Bates, the guard, and then the big one, Keenan Allen. So Keenan Allen and DJ Moore on a receiving core with Caleb Williams is, and there'll be a take out there that's like, oh, this is so unfair to Justin Fields. He never had that. Well, geography is destiny as a quarterback, and sometimes you lose, but Justin Fields is still being in the NFL. It's fine. Sometimes timing doesn't work out. Some people get drafted by Andy Reid. Some people get drafted by Adam Gase. It happens. No one ever said quarterbacking and the draft is fair. But Caleb Williams will get a better set of circumstances than Justin Fields ever got. That's a good thing for the Bears. Like, Ryan Pohl should be commended for a slow build that unfortunately probably didn't get a great look at Justin Fields and what he is because of the pieces that were there at the beginning. Luke Getsy was a bad offensive coordinator, the way they used him. I was frustrated just as someone who just loves good football, but polls and the slow build have worked to the point that Caleb Williams is going to step in and they're going to compete for the division. It's going to be a cut below Detroit and Green Bay, but it's still going to be, they're going to be a, if I had to guess, they'd be a wild card playoff team year one. And so that's sort of the, that's the trajectory that they're on. And I know, like, I think now we've gotten to this weird thing where we assume that the Bears are just always going to be bad. But no, the Caleb Williams, if you think, and there've been people who are like, well, the Bears are going to waste Caleb Williams. Well, if the Bears are so incapable of developing a quarterback, then the good thing is, eventually they're going to hit on a quarterback who changes everything. Caleb Williams has the capability to do that. Like, you, the point of drafting a franchise changer is he changes your franchise. Think about the Chiefs before Mahomes. Alex Smith, really good player. Not Mahomes, not capable of winning a Super Bowl. You need to draft the franchise changer. And in fact, I would say, if you don't have a franchise changer, just keep drafting until you find the franchise changer. Anyway, Lions. DJ Reader, 2 years on the interior of that defense, 2-year contract. Acquired Carlton Davis. Signed Marcus Davenport, not expecting too much there. Re-signed on the offensive line, Graham Glasgow. So some sort of, I guess you'd call them minor moves, although DJ Reader, the run defense is getting better and better and better. And they're starting, you got to remember, this was not a good defense the last few years. And they've just slowly built piece by piece. They almost made the Super Bowl without a really good defense. Aiden Hutchinson was their only legitimate pass rush for most of last year. Their pressure rates were pretty bleak for a lot of that season because Aiden Hutchinson was it. But that's how you change things is you get a DJ Reader, you get a Carlton Davis. So I'm not like, it should not be surprised that they can win. They're on the list of teams that can win the Super Bowl. But I also think that they're probably going to be better than they were last year. So I'm picking them to win the division because of that, but that doesn't mean that the Packers A, can't win the Super Bowl as a wild card, or B, can't just prove me wrong, win 16 games. So the Packers, to me, Jordan Love is going to take a massive step forward again because of the way he ended last season. But I also think that no one overrates Jordan Love quite like Bears fans who have decided that it's happening again and they're doomed for the next 20 years. I think that just kind of PTSD and processing and that trauma and all that stuff. I think Jordan Love is on track to be a top 10 quarterback, but he's still going to be kind of right on the fringe this year. I just think there's too much depth at the quarterback position. So Josh Jacobs, 4 years, 48. Don't really know what was going on there. AJ Dillon back in the fold, and Xavier McKinney at safety, which will help along with a new look defense. So the floor is high. The athletes that Brian Gutekunst has assembled are coming together really well and with good coaching, especially on defense, the Georgia guys, et cetera. The way, and they understand, everybody's always, I've always made fun, oh, you always go with the guys who can jump and run fast and all that stuff. It's because the smartest teams who bet on athleticism tend to be right. Like, look at the Packers. Look at even the positions where that doesn't typically translate, like wide receiver. Like, Christian Watson was a hell of an athlete. Christian Watson, when healthy, is a beast. And so that's why I always bet on athleticism. That's what the smartest teams do. Going back to Ted Thompson, they always did. Oh, this guy has explosion in his testing numbers. Good. Let's draft him and figure the rest out later. Always the way to go. But the Packers, we're starting to see that plan along with the quarterback and Matt LaFleur and that offense. It's like he can do everything. It's like a kitchen sink offense right now. I love them. I just love them. NFC South, I got to tell you, this is unfortunate. There are no Super Bowl teams here. A very different version of the NFC East, because in theory, the NFC East should have Super Bowl teams. No Super Bowl teams. Bucks, Saints, Falcons are competing for a division. Panthers competing for nothing. We know what the Falcons did, signing Kirk Cousins, which is going to win them the division, but doesn't raise their ceiling in any significant way with the rest. And by the way, there's far more AFC teams that can win the Super Bowl in the NFC, partly because of what I described, where the Cowboys and the Eagles have abdicated their role as Super Bowl contenders. Yeah, we're good. Yeah, no, we're good. We thought about it. We decided not to do it. Kirk Cousins, Darnell Mooney also signed, acquired Rondell Moore via trade. Also signed Ray McLeod, 2 years, $6 million. So they're going to be good. They could have been good last year. They won 7 games last year with nothing going right for them and one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. So Kirk Cousins is going to make all the throws you need. He's going to hang in the pocket. He's going to be good in rhythm. He's going to be good downfield. And they're going to win a bunch of games. So I think they're going to win the division quite handily, but I can't eliminate the Saints. Almost won the division last year. They were over 500, and they have an uninspiring coach, uninspiring quarterback. The only inspiring thing that happened was when Jameis Winston had a mutiny at the end of the season for no reason. Like, that was the only memory I have of that team. And they go out, they release Marcus May, they extend Honey Badger, release Michael Thomas. We'll see about that, because he's been pretty angry about this, and there's been some conflicting reports about what his future is going to be. But I'm not seeing a lot of signing Willie Gay too. I'm not seeing a lot of improvement. It's just that this division is going to be so bunched up that 2 good weeks can win the division. So if there's Saints fans who are like, no, you're missing something, please, please tell me. And then the Buccaneers, I've had people, when I said that, I said one on the ESPN last week and said that the Falcons were easily win the division, and Bucs fans correctly were like, last year, everybody picked everybody but the damn Bucks, and the Bucks are pretty good. They're bringing back Baker Mayfield. They're bringing back extra pieces. They re-signed Mike Evans. They franchised tag Antoine Winfield Jr. They re-signed Levante David to 1 year. They got rid of the defense. Shaq Barrett went elsewhere. Devin White's no longer there. But it's there's a lot of pieces here, and they play really well. And there's a proof of concept there. And Liam Cohen's the offensive coordinator. He's really good. He came from Kentucky. He's with the Rams before that. He understands that system. And I think when you have a reclamation project like Baker Mayfield, and a lot of it was like, he was better on third downs. He was better on throwing to the running back. But when you have that proof of concept, you've proven yourself to be a good staff. And I don't think, I feel bad about doubting the Bucks. I just think the Falcons are better, but Bucks fans have every right to get on me about this. I just think the Falcons are better. Sorry, guys. All right. Last thing, NFC West. This is the hardest one. The Rams were on my Super Bowl list on Friday morning when I was going through this last week and saying, hey, these are the teams, because I believed in the talent, but I also believed in Sean McVay, and I believe they were supposed to, just narrative-wise, they were supposed to take their medicine and be bad last year, and they won 10 games, and they looked like a buzzy Super Bowl team in the month of December. And I think when you start adding legitimate pieces and you already have the baseline of talent and you're signing Jonah Jackson and you're signing Darius Williams, bring him back. You're signing Cam Curl, who's really good, was in a little bit of anonymity there with the Commanders. Kobe Parkinson, 3 years, 22. But you lose Aaron Donald, who's it's not a ceremonial thing. Aaron Donald is still one of the best players in football. Him and Jason Kelce retiring in the same year is significant because they were both, first of all, a little bit undersized from a height perspective for Donald, certainly. But they just dominated the interior. They were some of the smartest players we've ever seen. But then beyond that, they were still playing at the peak of their powers. That never happens. Never. And like, I know Donald probably would have had to reduce his snaps or something like that going forward, but like, Aaron Donald is still one of the best players in football and had the capability to be one of the best players in football next year. And so when I think about, they were already a borderline can win the Super Bowl team, and I'm, until further notice, removing them, the Los Angeles Rams. I'm removing them. I don't feel good about that because I don't like betting against Sean McVay when he's got talent. But Aaron Donald, that's just a different equation on the defense in the middle of the line. So I got to remove him. Niners, obviously. They made the Super Bowl last year. They could have won the Super Bowl last year. Signed Leonard Floyd. Resigned. I saw John Feliciano of the Weekend did a one last ride Instagram. So he's back. He's back, baby. One last ride. I don't know. I like John Feliciano. He went to Miami. But not. There's got to be a higher threshold for one last ride Instagrams. But he's coming back. Jordan Elliott, 2 years, $10 million. A couple other guys in the mix there. So Brandon Allen resigned. Colt McKivitz resigned. Even if they didn't make the Super Bowl last year, like Kyle Shanahan establishes a floor, I don't know what could remove them. It's actually kind of funny. I was doing that exercise last week, but like what with the Chiefs could get me to remove them from the list of teams who win the Super Bowl? And there isn't anything short of Mahomes and Reed. Like they could lose everybody else. Kelce could retire, Jones could retire. Like with Shanahan, as long as the talent is there, and we'll see what happens with the Brandon Ayuk situation, but that doesn't, even if they lost Brandon Ayuk, I would still put them on the list of teams to win the Super Bowl. Like it's very easy to put them on the list. But as long as Shanahan is there and there's a threshold of talent on the defense, he will figure that out. And they will win a playoff game almost as the floor, which means they can win the Super Bowl. Seahawks to me, probably still a year away. Probably still a year away. I like the re-signing of Leonard Williams. I really like the new coaching staff. I think Mike McDonald understands the future of football and he's going to get there. I'm putting on the not playing for anything list. If they were in the NFC South, they'd win the division, but that's a separate thing. Arizona, same thing. Just a year away. And I think that people also thought that they'd be in a little better position in the draft this year because everyone thought everybody thought Houston was going to be what Carolina was last year, which is they were going to be the first overall pick, second overall pick, whatever. Houston takes a huge leap forward. And then they end up with their own pick outside of the top three. And so instead of controlling the draft, they're kind of on the fringes of it. And I don't know how much, they're going to get a stud player. They're going to get a Marvin Harrison Jr. They're going to get one of the tackles. It's going to be fine. They got Desmond Ridder. That changes everything. But that's just, I think Sean Murphy Bunting will help in the secondary. And a couple other, you know, Bilal Nicholas, I'm looking at here, Mac Wilson, Justin Jones, 3 years, $30 million on the defensive interior. So they're adding pieces, but I'm not seeing where the gap is being made up with the rest of that division. So that's it. Teams who win the Super Bowl in the NFC, incredibly bleak list: Lions, Packers, Niners. I cannot believe it's that few. I cannot believe it's that few, but this is what happens. Maybe I'll add teams, but I tend to be more discriminating than most people when we do these lists about teams that can make it. But I cannot believe there's only three teams on my list. I'm again happy to hear that why you think another team could do it, but I just think there's too many teams in transition, in flux. We're like, so that's it. That's the list. All right. Thank you to JJ Watt. Thank you to my producers, Flynn and Miles. Remember to give us 5 stars. This has been Football. We will see you on Friday.